Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And good evening, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Conversations Live, where we connect you with the artists and authors you love, who bring you the music and books you can't get enough of. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. I want to once again thank those joining us here on the radio side of our program at 92.3 FM. We also welcome our good friends joining us online worldwide through blogtalkradio.com. Whether you listen to us through our switchboard, our live chat, or even through our podcast, we're glad to have all of you with us. We have an amazing hour coming up before you, and I think you'll find there's a little something for everyone, so I hope you can stay with us. We're going to get things kicked off by speaking to author Bruce Rosen. He's going to talk to us about his journey in life and what led him to write the book, If You Ever Need Me, I Won't Be Far Away. It's a powerful account, not only of his life, but really the lives of so many of us. And we're going to talk about that, the parallels that he's hearing from readers. Also, what he hopes all of us take away from the book as we're trying to make sense of our own existence, and also what we can do to make the world a better place. At 25 minutes past the hour, we have our resident chef, Bruce Treader. He'll be joining us for our quick and easy cooking tip of the day. At 30 minutes past the hour, we'll be speaking to Angelo Ellerby. Angelo is actually the president of Double Exposure Communications. It's a great organization that handles media relations, but also helping individuals with artist development. He's going to talk about why that's so important for him and what he's doing now to help all of us to be able to put our best selves forward. Again, it's going to be a great hour. Glad you all could join us for the show. As I said, to get things kicked off, we have Bruce Rosen joining us live on the program. Bruce, welcome to Conversations Live.
Nice to be here, Cyrus.
Well, same here, Bruce. And I just want to say, and I said it to you before we went on, I want to say it for our listeners as well. I do apologize because Bruce was actually supposed to be on our program several weeks ago. We had some technical issues going on, and he was gracious enough to reschedule with us. So, Bruce, thank you so much for working with us. This is an amazing account that you've given us in the book, If You Ever Need Me, I Won't Be Far Away. I'm going to get into some of the things that really struck me about the book here in a moment. But I want to talk about what this process has been like for you, Bruce, because I have to imagine at taking readers into what is really the intimacy of your life, of who you are, is a very personal thing. Was it an easy decision for you to make, and what has the response been like for you?
I think it was an absolute essential decision to make. I felt in my as I was growing up that at some point in my life, there would come a time when it would be necessary to write the book, to write the book of my life, of the feelings that I've had, my thoughts, my philosophies, and not so much that they just belong to me, but I've always felt that in expressing them, that there would be an effect on people and their lives. Now, as I started to write the book, it became clear to me that not only was it cathartic, but it was practically, fundamentally necessary to express the elements of joy, of happiness, of sadness. There's loss, there's tragedy. There are many, many layers in this book, and I think the impetus behind it, what triggered the writing of the book, was a separation from my wife that was very, very painful and created a sense of loss. And I needed to come to terms with that feeling. And so, well, I knew that I would write a book someday about important matters in my life. I never realized the course and the direction that it would one day take. And as I sat down to write this book, and there's a section in the book, a passage in the book, where I describe, you know, we've had a very, very loving relationship. I'm still very, very close with my ex-wife, who, you know, we have a very, very deep friendship and a very, very loving family. But there were events that transpired, perhaps triggered by the loss of my mom, who plays a very, very important role in this book. And I think I went to a place where my wife couldn't find me. a place of introspection and loss and grief. And it inevitably led to a separation, which then led to the writing of this book. And there's a section in the book where I describe that feeling, never ever anticipating that, that this would ever happen to me in life. The feeling that, that I think all men and certainly all women that have ever separated or been divorced and have found true love in their lives and felt that, that true love continued to exist, even though it didn't exist in the confines of the marriage anymore. I described that feeling of moving all of your boxes out of a place, out of your home where you're comfortable, into a vacant apartment, and sitting on those boxes and looking out the window, and coming to terms with the feeling that you are, you know, that you've made this decision, whether it was by necessity or there were, you know, perhaps no other alternatives. You made this decision. You're alone. And what do you do now? And I think that that particular moment triggered the cathartic experience of writing this book. And then, of course, during the writing of this book, many, many things occurred. The recognition of what it takes to find joy amidst the obstacles in life, the recollection of people that are so close that you don't want to forget. And as I went through my life, as you know, living my life, you know, trying to live my life as consciously as possible, as a conscious human being, there were people and experiences and moments and sensations and many, many things that we all experience, the music and a taste that you'll have, and a holding hands and an embrace and a conversation and a scent and a moment and sitting in a park, wherever it may be, and the people that you've shared them with, that you'd never want to forget. And so there were, as I say, as I was growing up, I recognized that I would write an important book, at least for me, one day, and that it would be, I would hope to share it with people, and that I wanted to be conscious and remember the people that were very, very important in my life and whose life I was important to, never forget them, take mental snapshots, always try to remember the sights, the sounds, the sensations, the music, everything that we experienced together. And then as I wrote the book, it was astonishing to me how clear the recollection was, and each recollection led to another recollection, led to another memory, another scent. And music, which plays a very big role in this book, triggers the feelings, the memories, the sensations, the expectations, the sadness, the joy, the passion that one feels in life. And there are about 50 words, lyrics to about 50 songs in this book. We had to go out and obtain the rights to them, which we did. And each song, I think, stimulates for me, and then will stimulate for the reader who we were, who we are today, what we were feeling then, what are we feeling now. It's all tied into music in so many ways. And music plays a very, very important role in that book, and I think music connects us.
I'm gonna have to stop you there for a moment so I can kind of reset. For those that are just coming in, either on the radio side of our program or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. I'm speaking with Bruce Rosen. I was speaking to him, asking him what was it like to be able to give the world pretty much his journey, to be able to take us through his journeys in life and what he hoped all of us would take away from it. That's what he was just sharing there. And Bruce, I hated to cut you off, but I wanted to kind of, for those that are just coming in, to kind of know what we were talking about. You did talk about music, and that was one of the things that I picked up on as well, of course, was important. And we talk about on this show a lot how we all kind of have a soundtrack to our life and what music would kind of define who we are. But I want to talk about the definition that you wanted for the reader. We know that this was a personal account for you, but what were you hoping readers who knew nothing of your personal journey before reading the book, what did you hope they take away from it after finishing it?
I felt that there are a lot of journeys in this book, and I felt that, well, first of all, I would say the letting go I tried to come to terms with regret, with guilt, with the recognition that love can exist. True love doesn't, you know, ever really die. It can exist in and out of the confines of a marriage, with a person that one may feel, with whom one is a soulmate. I think that there were many messages that unfolded to me as I was writing the book, but I think one of the major ones, one of the most important themes in the book, is that, you know, clearly life is hard, and we must experience the consequences of our actions. And often human beings make decisions that they may think are necessary, that seem necessary, and perhaps feel sadness or regret or guilt about those. Sometimes that guilt or regret becomes so great and so large that we become confined. We can't. You can become sick. You can become incapacitated by feelings of regret or guilt or a sense of not being not living up to the person that you wanted to be. And I think in terms of writing this book, I realized that life unfolds in a way ultimately that it is meant to unfold, and that we have decisions that we can make, we have choices we can make, but there are limitations to those choices. And while we are free to choose, and if we're conscious human beings, we try to make the best decisions we can. We can't control the effects of our decisions, and we can't control really being put in a position to have to make decisions that are very difficult and painful to make. And we do try to make the best and most logical choices we can make. As the consequences for those decisions unfold, we may feel freedom, we may feel regret, we may feel sadness, we may feel guilt. And I think that one of the major themes of this book, and the message that I would love for listeners to take away with them, is that let go, try to communicate with people the best you can. Try to communicate with your partner the best you can. Try to save a marriage the best you can. Try to save a relationship the best you can. But also recognize when events are unfolding in a way over which you don't have control, and let go of the regret. Move on. Experience freedom. Embrace freedom. And in doing so, allow the joy to enter. Allow oneself to be the fullest human being we can. And I think that's a very important message that occurred to me through this. We have choices, but we don't always know the results that we can't know ultimately the results of them, but we can only make the best decisions we can. And ultimately, beneath all the difficulties of living day to day, we can obtain joy. It's right there for us. We have to find ways to let it in. And one of the ways is letting go of guilt and regret.
Letting go of the guilt and the regret, I think that's something that all of us can benefit from. Again, we're speaking to Bruce Rosen. He's the author of the book, If You Ever Need Me, I Won't Be Far Away. Bruce, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, I want to talk about, for me, what was one of the most powerful episodes in the book. And that was the jump into the Colorado River. We're going to talk about that and the lessons from that that all of us can take away. We're also going to let our listeners know how they can get their own copy of the book. You're listening to Conversations Live here on the radio dial at 92.3 FM and online worldwide through blogtalkradio.com.
Character building counts. Have you weaved a character building message such as goodness, honesty, leadership, empathy, or responsibility into your book of any genre? Most likely you have. Character Building Counts Book Awards can help you market your book through our unique book award program. We honor children's, young adult, fiction, and nonfiction books, from romance and paranormal to business and memoir, that deliver a character building message. Get the attention and acclaim your work deserves by winning radio time, seals for your book cover, press releases, web presence, and more. Character Building Counts at CBC Awards. Sign up now at www.cbcawards.com. cbcawards.com. CBC, where character building counts.
Your mother always told you to say no to peer pressure. So when you hear how 4 million drivers switched to GEICO last year, you aren't swayed. Then again, those 4 million drivers probably saved hundreds by switching to the nation's third largest car insurance company. Maybe your mother was wrong. Maybe you could have joined that hippie commune in Montana. Or maybe you could save money by switching to GEICO today.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
We're back with Conversations Live, and our conversation with author Bruce Rosen. He's given the world the book, If You Ever Need Me, I Won't Be Far Away. He's been sharing with us some of the, for one thing, the reasons why he wrote the book, but also what he hopes readers take away. One of the last things he says before we went to break is to being able to let go, and that is something that's sometimes hard to do. Bruce, one of the episodes that I remember the most from the book was jumping into the Colorado River, your friends and you, and that experience for you, and the way that your friends were there to motivate you and then to push you to move forward. I want you to kind of translate that for our listeners, because some of them are going through a situation where they may feel like, you know, they're drowning in their circumstances. Mm-hmm. They're drowning in the world. Mm-hmm. What can you tell them to help them to realize the importance of not giving up and to swim even when it seems difficult to do so?
Well, when the experience, should I recount the experience? Do you have enough time to recount the experience in the
sure.
Colorado River?
Sure, go ahead.
I was about 17 years old, and I was with my brother and my best friend, and there was an account of this in the book. And we were in the Colorado River in the summer, and it was hot, and prickly needles on the back kind of hot. And there was a bridge, that a train would use. It would, you know, just a little bit of very small boundaries on either side of this bridge, and it must have been perhaps 60 or 70 feet above the river. My brother and my best friend decided that they wanted to go up there and jump and then swim to a little island in the middle of the river. And the river looked very, very calm and didn't look to have any turbulence. It was a beautiful blue sky day, still as can be. And other people had jumped into that river, and so they decided that they wanted to do it. So my friend Phil, and there's a section in the book called Philip Rusty Sigler, one of the most truly loyal friends a person could ever have in life, and brave and courageous, he decided to jump first, and he walked up to the ledge, and without thinking, he jumped in, and he swam to the island, and the island was maybe about, perhaps 50 or 60 yards in the middle of the river. My brother then followed him, and my brother was a little bit more cautious, but he had a real crazy streak in him. He was a hockey goalie. He could have been in the, could have made it to the NHL. He was a real acrobat, and he was pretty brave, but he was a little bit more cautious than my best friend that jumped first, and he jumped in and started swimming to the river, to the island, and I felt very, very nervous about doing it. And started probably hyperventilating a little bit, and I decided to jump. I mean, because I just heard an ad that came on just before me about peer pressure. And had I not paid attention to peer pressure, I never would have. I never would have jumped because I actually had fear, too much fear to jump. But I went ahead and did it. And when I hit the water and came up, clearly I was out of breath because of the hyperventilation that occurred prior to the jump. I started swimming toward the island, and because of the hyperventilation, became out of breath very, very quickly, and then recognized that there was a current that I couldn't overcome, and it was starting to push me down the river. My brother and my friend yelled, "Bruce, Bruce, come, come! It's not very far. You can make it." And I couldn't really. I yelled something to the effect of, "I'm going to swim back. I'm going to swim back." Well, they didn't. They didn't wait a second. Instantly, they took off after me. And my friend, the first one that jumped, got to me first and said, "Put your arms around my shoulders." And my brother, shortly after that, pulled up the backside and started pushing. My friend, the one whose shoulders I jumped on, had the presence of mind and the sense of humor to make the comment as I'm out of breath and fearing for the, you know, obviously trying to survive, makes the comment, which I always thought it was a funny comment. He said, they always tell you not to, you know, they always tell you when you're going to save a person to tell them not to jump on your back. So he's like, he had this, the presence of mind to sort of like chuckle about how I jumped on his back to save my life. Well, in the end, they pulled me to the side, and the first thing I did was kiss the hot gravel with my lips, just absolutely kiss it, and was so thankful to be alive. So the message that I would give from this is both a real incident and a metaphor is, number one, listen to your inner voice. When your inner voice tells you to do something or to not do something, pay close attention. Pay very, very close attention. Number two, the message of the ad, peer pressure. Don't give in to peer pressure. Number three, I would say, allow yourself to admit that you're weak. Allow yourself to admit that you're weak. Because if I had insisted that I was strong and that I could make it, and I wanted to be as macho a swimmer as my brother and my friend, I might have drowned. And so I allowed myself to be weak. I allowed myself to acknowledge that I couldn't make it, and my friend and my brother, their loyalty and their intuition and their strength and their power and their friendship saved my life.
Yeah. Again, the title of the book is If You Ever Need Me, I Won't Be Far Away. The author is Bruce Rosen. Bruce, how can our listeners find out more information about you and get their copy of the book?
Well, we have you can buy it directly from the website, which is ElmaRosePublishing.com. ElmaRosePublishing.com. It's also available on all the e-readers, you know, the Kindle and the Nook, and it's available on Amazon as well. And so those are probably the best places to get it. Now, it's in bookstores. I live in San Francisco, and it's in bookstores in San Francisco, and we're hoping that it's going to expand to other bookstores around the country. But you can certainly get it through the readers on Amazon and at the website.
Okay. Bruce, congratulations to you on the book and the messages of it, and I know it will continue to inspire people as it has already. And we look forward to staying in contact with you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
No problem, Bruce. Thank you. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we have our resident chef, Bruce Treader. He'll be giving us our quick and easy cooking tip of the day. We followed that 30 minutes past the hour. And we'll be speaking to Angela Ellerby of Double Exposure. He'll be talking to us not only about the work that he does to help others to be able to live their dreams, but also what he's doing to help them in development and how all of us can benefit from that as well. He's also going to talk about what he's doing to make sure that all of us are putting our best self forward each and every day. You're listening to Conversations Live here on the radio at 92.3 FM and online worldwide through blogtalkradio.com.
Hi, this is Kendra. Come along with me on my journey of growing up. Family, friends, high school, decisions, and more decisions. Life seems to get more complicated each day. Along the way, we will share some laughs and even a few tears. But hey, that is life. Most importantly, we will stay positive, keep it moving, and never give up.
Growing Pains, Kendra's Diary, is rated number one on Conversations Book Club's list of books designed for our youth for 2011. This book is for the young and the young at heart. It is a must-read. It's available in paperback online at www.kendrasdiaries.com, Amazon, and BarnesandNoble.com. It's also available in ebook on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Smashwords. Get yours today. It's now time to turn it over to our resident chef, Bruce Treader, joining us live from Massachusetts for our quick and easy cooking tip. Bruce, go ahead, take it away.
Hi, I'm Bruce Treader. Welcome back to Quick and Easy Cooking on Conversations Live with Cyrus Webb. Quick and Easy Cooking is all about practical cooking tips to help you get a good meal on the table real fast. All right, well, I hope you had an excellent and maybe even relaxing holiday season and that you're off to a good start to the new year. And to ensure that your year in the kitchen starts off as safely as possible, tonight, instead of talking about a specific recipe, I'm going to talk about how to handle a knife safely while cutting or chopping food. First of all, and I know this may sound counterintuitive, but in my mind at least, by far the most dangerous piece of equipment in a kitchen is a dull knife. The reason is that it takes more pressure to set an edge into whatever it is you're cutting with a dull knife than with a sharp knife. If you're having a tough time with what I just said, which I certainly can appreciate, imagine a nice, plump, juicy red tomato. You know just by touching and picking one up that the tomato as a whole is relatively soft and that the surface of the tomato skin is usually tight and a bit waxy in texture. Now, imagine a sharp knife edge magnified so that you can, no kidding, see that edge as if you were looking down the knife from the tip to the heel of the blade, and notice that that edge comes to a distinct point. Then imagine that sharp knife edge coming in contact with the tight skin of a tomato. As an analogy, think of what it's like when a sharp pin comes in contact with a fully inflated balloon. It doesn't take much pressure at all with a pin to break through the surface of the balloon. In exactly the same way, it doesn't take much hand pressure on a sharp knife to break the skin of a tomato and set an edge into the tomato flesh. Once that edge is set, the path of the knife down through the tomato flesh is entirely predictable, which is exactly what you want. Now, let's stick with the balloon and pin idea for a minute. Imagine the same pin and a balloon, only this time you've turned the pin around in your hand so that the flat end of the pin makes contact with the balloon. It's a laugh to imagine how much harder you'd have to push that flat end of the pin into the balloon surface to make the balloon pop. Now, keep that image in mind as you think of a slightly rounded edge of a knife making contact with the surface of a tomato. It doesn't take much imagination at all to realize that it's going to take a lot more pressure to get a dull knife edge to break the surface of the tomato and set an edge than it would to get a sharp knife edge to do the same thing. When pressure is added to a dull bladed knife against a smooth and somewhat waxy slippery surface, it's much harder to control where the knife is going to go. That lack of control is what makes a dull knife unpredictable and therefore more likely to slip off the object being cut and into your hand. Of course, knife edges are usually neither completely razor sharp or totally basketball round. They're usually somewhere in between. So to ensure the safety of the hand you're using to hold any object securely and safely to the cutting board, it's best and safest to hold that object with curled, spread fingers. To picture exactly what I mean, imagine what your fingers look like when you're holding a baseball in your hand. That's the kind of curl I'm talking about. Now, those curled and spread fingers not only do a great job at holding an object securely in place, they also serve as an excellent guide for the knife. To get a picture in your mind of what I mean, imagine the wide, flat side of a knife running gently against your middle finger knuckle and always maintaining contact with the side of the knife against that knuckle. What I mean by that is never lift the knife out of whatever you're cutting so that the knife blade loses contact with your knuckles. Now, while maintaining knuckle-to-knife blade contact, if you then work with your anchoring slash guiding hand and knife gripping hand as a unit as you move across the object you're cutting, you'll greatly minimize the chances of your anchoring hand accidentally being cut. Of course, making this cutting method work as well as possible takes practice, but like any other newly learned skill, if you start slowly and work with it deliberately, you'll embed what you've learned into muscle memory. Once you do that, you'll soon find that this safe cutting technique becomes a habit. So, two takeaways from this segment. Dull knives are the most dangerous pieces of equipment in the kitchen. I'll talk more about knife sharpening when my newly renovated or being renovated site is good to go so that I can show pictures and videos as directly and efficiently as possible. Secondly, but equally importantly, use curled and spread fingers on the hand anchoring what you want cut to the cutting board. Not only do curled and spread fingers provide the surest grip on whatever object you're cutting, but they also provide a guide for the knife that will make cutting as predictable and therefore as safe as possible. All right, as I said at the start, I hope these practical knife handling tips help get you off to a very safe year in the kitchen. Thanks very much for listening. Have a great week, and please listen in next week, same time, for more quick and easy cooking with me, Bruce Treader, on Conversations Live with Cyrus Webb.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
It is 30 minutes past the hour, and you're listening to Conversations Live, where we connect you with the artists and authors you love, who bring you the music and books you can't get enough of. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. I want to once again thank those joining us on the radio dial at 92.3 FM and online worldwide through blogtalkradio.com. We're glad all of you could join us. Angelo Ellerbe is an individual who has literally made a career of helping individuals put their best selves forth, normally in their career with music, but also in other areas of their life as well. Angelo is making his first appearance on our program to talk about the work that he's doing through Double Exposure and also what he has coming up for all of us to be able to benefit from. Angelo, welcome to Conversations Live. Hello, Angelo. Can you hear us? We seem to be having a problem getting Angelo in on this side of our program. What we're going to do is take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to try again to bring Angelo in. One of the artists that Angelo has worked with that we actually had an opportunity to speak with on this show is Stephanie Courtney. Here she is with her single, Taken Over. We'll be right back with Conversations Live. Stay with us. That was Stephanie Courtney with Taken Over here on Conversations Live, 92.3 FM and online worldwide through blogtalkradio.com. Just one of the artists that our next guest has worked with to help them not only in being able to put their best selves forward, but especially in their development as individuals as well. I'm speaking about Angelo Ellerbe. He's joining us now live on the program for the first time to talk about his journey, what he's been able to do for others, and what he's going to be doing for all of us, too. Angelo, welcome to Conversations Live.
But my pleasure, and thank you for having me as a guest.
Hey, man, no problem. Thank you so much for being on with us. Now, you have worked with an amazing roster of artists. Where did this passion, first of all, to help other individuals put forth their best selves, where did that passion first come from?
The passion comes from a lovely, lovely lady that I'm romantically in love with, my mother, Eva Ellerbe. She taught me the quintessentials of life. She said, in order to move ahead, excuse me, you had to move forward with helping people. She gave me a road that I travel on still to this day, and it's about sharing and caring in God's work and His word. So I grew up in the city of Newark, where with six brothers and sisters. My mother had an eighth grade education. She was a waitress, and she gave us what was survival tools. And she said, in order to survive, you have to be able to share whatever you have. And that's where it all began. My sisters and my brothers, we all are equal with an understanding that we must do the work of God. And in that, you can share, you can care, you can understand the importance of sacrifice. It's not important that you win every race, my mother would tell me. She says, stay in the race. So I've been committed and been a part of this this entertainment industry. Now I'm celebrating 38 years in doing what I do. Wow. I'm into teaching and educating and motivating young people to claim their own victories. I cannot go with, I'm no one's judge or jury as to what is winning ingredients and if you can be what you set out to be. All I can do is prepare you for the opportunities. Because I've never, ever met an opportunity. I always had to create my opportunity. And that's what I do still to this day, is aiding young people to have a vision of creating their own opportunities and preparing them for the who, what's, the when's, the where's, and the why's of existence in this entertainment industry. Educating them about the importance of royalties, your splits, your publishing, how to travel, diction, speech, mannerisms, all of the winning qualities that's in us, inside of all of us to this day. We just need to enhance it and embrace it and prepare ourselves to be at a board table and be able to articulate your point of direction, not to just sign a contract to be signing the contract, but to know what's in the body of the contract so that you will not get ripped off.
Yeah.
So it started at the beginning of my life, and it started with my mother, and it started with the mentors that I've had in my life. I was fortunate to work with the four-time Grammy Award winner James M. Toomey when I was designing clothes at a very young age, and he developed me. I ran his company for like 10 years at a very early age in my life. We have been about, and I associate only with people that are positive, people that are going to claim their victory, people who have a work ethic and want to get on the right track of life. I hope I somewhat answered your question.
You did, Angela, and I want to go to a few of the things that you said, because I think it's so important for our listeners to know that everything does have a genesis, a beginning, and for you it was in the home, which is where you would hope it would start, but unfortunately not everyone has that. So there are people like you that are available to help them. I watched you say something in an interview, and I want to kind of tie this into this conversation, and that is that a lot of people want to be a part of what you are a part of, the entertainment industry, but they don't really know how to be their best selves and to put their best face forward in this business. And can you talk to us a little bit about that? Because in the world that we live in, Angelo, it is really the thing that people talk about is the getting on. There's never really the conversation about the kind of person you should be and also how not to lose yourself in this industry, as you were talking about. How is it that you, through the work that you do in helping individuals through their development, how do you then help them to realize the importance of that as they're trying to move forward and build in their career?
The first thing that I say to anyone, I don't care if it's Mary J. Blige, Dionne Warwick, or Whitney Houston, we have to start at the beginning. And I tell them, if you're going to do this as a part-time job, let the door hit you with a good Lord split you, because I'm not about that. I'm about you getting an understanding of the who, the what's, the when's, the where's, and the why's. Let's begin this task and this relationship at the beginning. So if your mother and your father did not teach you the mere fundamentals of existence and longevity in America, and particularly in America, then you got to go back to the beginning. It's clear in my mind that we have to teach our young artists the importance of artist development. And they have to make a way, they have to have a way of understanding. So many kids get into this whole hype thing that I got to get a manager. But what is a manager going to do for you at that very tender time of your career? There's nothing to manage. But what you do have to go perfect your craft. When you get your craft in order, then we cannot look for a manager. Maybe we need to look for an entertainment attorney that can orchestrate, supervise, and or manage whatever opportunities you're getting so that you're not being ripped off, so you're not doing things in perpetuity forever and ever and ever. Can't happen that way. So what we have to do is begin at the beginning. It begins with the education. You got to know that you have to deal with your royalties. Your royalties is like your Social Security check in the other world. And if you don't have an understanding of your splits, the percentages that you have to get, you're working in vain. And you must have ownership of your music, and that's important. The ownership gives you value, that you should still own your own masters, depending on your deals, and that you need to structure a deal that is going to be lucrative and beneficial for you initially. So what you need to do as an artist is come together with a young, aggressive entertainment attorney that will work with you. He or she knows that they believe in you and believe in your talent and your ability that they're going to get paid. And you structure the deal with that attorney at a very young stage in the relationship to say what his or her split is going to be. You graduate. You graduate with an understanding that I'm learning what I'm doing. I'm now trusting my attorney. I'm getting things together. Now maybe it's time to bring in that manager. You got to be consciously aware that every time you bring someone on, you're bringing them on with a percentage.
Right. And I think,
remember.
Go ahead, Angela.
I was just going to say the story about. I remember in the early 70s and 80s and then the 90s, I was getting so many rappers coming into my office. Oh, would you represent me? Because at that time, I was managing DMX and doing publicity for DMX. I mean, okay, so this guy was the king of the rap community for about 4 or 5 years and selling well over 30 million records in 2 or 3 years. So they would come and they had their posses. They had their roadmap. They had all of these people coming into my office, and I had to say, come on, we got to get this right. I'm only going to talk to the person that's signing the check. So everybody else, I got to go do something else because you can't come up in my office and block. I mean, literally 15 and 20 people. And I would ask them the first question, who travels with you? Oh, these are all my boys. They travel with me. The record company got it, Angelo. You know, why are you being so concerned with it? You need to understand the record company is in business to make money. And there's a thing called recoupment. You could go take all your boys. Y'all can get all the finest hotel rooms and da-da-da-da-da. You can run up those bills. Okay, so the record company is going to pay him, but they're going to come back and recoup it against your money. So is it necessary that you bring 15 people on the road with you? Is it necessary that you bring a makeup and a hairstylist on the road with you? Why don't you take some classes and learn how to do your own makeup, learn how to do your own hair, and only hire those creative people when there's something, a big gala, that you can, that you want to look your best for, but you can't go spending money that you don't have.
Right.
Isn't
that interesting, though, Angelo? And I just want to say, for those that are just tuning in, either on the radio side of our program or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. I'm speaking with Angelo Ellerby of Double Exposure, and he's really talking to us not only about how he got into the entertainment industry, but the lessons he learned early on from his mother and how he's applied that in his business, and now is helping other individuals through artist development to apply it in their own. And the point you just made, Angelo, is such an important one, because so many times, regardless of what industry we're in, we are told that we are supposed to have certain things. So we all end up doing it in some form or fashion, taking on things we don't need just because we feel like we're supposed to have it. Today, do you find that harder to be able to break that for artists than maybe 20 years ago, that to help them understand that you don't have to have all that you see others getting, not if you really are serious about having a long-term career?
Sure, there's been great bad examples, if that makes any sense. You know, when you talk about what's his name with the big pants? What was his name, the big rapper?
Hammer. Yeah.
A prime example. He had an entourage of 30 that traveled with them. He paid them all salaries. He had to pay for hotel. He had to pay for travel. He had to give them per diems each and every single day. That starts to accumulate. The question is, could you still be as effective with 5 dancers versus 30 dancers?
Right.
And then deal with wardrobe and the whole of the bit. These things are recouped. How do you sell the records that you sell and be the name that you are, and now you filed bankruptcy? Good examples. So to answer your question, we still have that, but we still have that very ambitious artist out there that believes in the glamour of the music industry. It is no glamour in the music industry. You make your own glamour. But you got to be smart about how you go to get that glamour, that to get things popping, as the kids say. You got to take your time, understand budgets. If you're looking for concepts, for costumes, if you're looking for choreographers, whatever you're looking for, you got to look at the bottom line, which is the dollar and cent. You didn't go and partake in all of this development than not to come home with something. And the important thing, I think, at this stage of the game, young people today are more money conscious as to what they're going to get than those of yesteryear. Because the ones of this time, they're getting outrageous performance salaries. They're getting endorsements. So they're consciously aware, because of people like Hammer has served such as a bad example as to what should not happen in your career. There's a distinction in being ambitious and then being ambitious. Ambitious is all over the map, and you have no focus and no guidelines to where you want to go and what you want to do. Dorothy said it in The Wiz, follow the yellow brick road. If there's a road and a map that has been laid and you've seen success come from that, then you need to follow that road. And if you have to detour from that road in order to get through an obstacle, then do that as well. But the plan has been laid out.
And that, I think, is a great segue to what you are doing now, Angelo, for all of us. You, on your website, you talk about, of course, this development, the great artists you've been able to work with. We actually heard one of them, Stephanie Courtney, who's been on this program, taking over. Thanks to you, we were able to have a conversation with her. But also great artists like the legendary Dionne Warwick, Karen White, Leon Huff. You've worked with all of these great artists, and now you're able to bring what you have been helping them to see in their careers and be able to apply in their careers to help all of us. Talk to us a little bit about your new platform and what you're doing and taking your artist development to a larger audience.
Well, you know, for me, it's really all about a give back. And I have always been a big fan of Berry Gordy's. And one of the reasons I became Berry Gordy's fan was that he understood that America was gangsta. And that when you're in Rome, you do what the Romans do. And when you're in America, you do what the Americans do. It's a custom that you follow. The music of this era and time that started in the 50s, our music, our R&B music was not being played on mainstream or either R&B radio stations. They played our music on beach channels. They did not take our music seriously. America looked at our music like we looked at rap music. It was rejected because they didn't understand it. Okay, so what happens? He says, how do I make it work for my music and my artists? I need to make them look American, so I'm going to dress them in the finest of clothes. I'm going to hire a modeling coach, a charm coach, to teach my female artists the importance about diction and speech and stylization and poise and posture. I'm going to get with the best producers and make love songs that is lyrically universally accepted. I'm going to teach them longevity. So I'm doing no more than the extension of Berry Gordy because he had to develop his artists, the music, the sound, in order to be accepted in the American marketplace. Thus, why we can talk about my alignments to Mary J. Blige and to Alicia Keys and to Ginuwine and to Dion and all of those people, I love them all, but they're not important to me. What's important to me are young artists like Stephanie Courtney and Kasha and all of the people that I represent because they're in a molding cycle. I can be everybody's secretary and take in press requests, but at the end of the day, I'm about developing, educating, stimulating, motivating people to the awareness of the music industry. And right. I want to teach them staying power. I want to teach them how to stay. Now, the problem that I have with so many young people who come my way, they come in with their ideas, their thoughts, and their suggestions, and I welcome it. But you've got to do it my way. We incorporate, but it has to be my way. Or we'll sacrifice, but it has to be my way. And a lot of times, managers will come to me and tell me about the directions that they're trying to go with the whole other bit there. And I welcome it. But I also say that if you're coming to an expert, let the expert do the job. When he or she fail at the assignment of doing the job, then that's when you should have recourse. But until then, you have to let the expert do his or her job, allow them to develop and grow your product. When you intrude in the productivity of the artist, then you improve in terms of the productivity to the teacher and to the instructor.
Right.
This is not a cup of instant coffee. This is brewed coffee. I don't drink anything instant. I don't want something that I can go and get it, microwave it, and get some quick enjoyment. I want something that's going to linger, that I can smell, that I can taste, and it's going to take its time.
And I think it goes back to what you said about Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, about it is a road. It's not a quick trip. This is a journey, and that you should have people on your team that are willing and ready to make the journey with you and to lead you, if necessary, on the journey. And Angelo, you know, I have to ask you this question because I'm noticing some of the messages just on our message board on blogtalkradio.com, and I can't even imagine for you to do what you do for as long as you've done it, to know who you have helped. What does that feel like to know that you have been so instrumental in the success of artists, you know, regardless of what their caliber, but in artists all these years? What does that feel like for you to know that you've had a part in their success?
Well, not necessarily a part of their success, but the success of God's work. I think that it's really important that an artist understands and recognizes being humble is the first thing. When you stay humble, for me, people are more willing to aid and assist you. When you are respectful, people are more willing to help you. And when you lose those things, you almost lost everything, because that is the magic of this staying power in the music industry. For me, it makes me feel good to have been a part of Mary J. Blige in her bad times, and to live and to see, as I said to her on the first day that I met her, this ain't going to be a cup of no instant coffee, girl, because if you want instant coffee, you can go downstairs to Starbucks. But I'm going to sit up here and brew this coffee for you. And each and every single day that she was a part of my artist development program, there was progression. So to see that spirit change now and that energy change now, and for her to go out and speak publicly to young women and open up organizations that help people all around this world, it makes me feel that I've done the work, or I've assisted in the work of what God has done for me. See, it's not about always getting, receiving royalties and all of those other things, because those things will come and go. But at the end of the day, did I do and did I share the way I needed to do and share for someone else? Did I give them a growth? I also give my clients, particularly the young ones, I give them an imaginary maturity pill. I tell them to take it 2 times a day with a glass of water and grow up. If this is what you say, you want to do, I will support you. But when you lie to me and you tell me this is what you want to do and that's not really what you want to do, you just want to be famous and you don't understand what being famous is really all about, I have no time for you.
Yeah.
And I break it down to a science so they get it. And the great reward for me is when they come back saying, you know what, I understood. Now I understand what it is that you were trying to do, and I've applied it here, there, and there. And so now this is my growth. So it makes me feel good, but I really believe that it becomes our jobs as seniors, as experts, as people of experience to share the work and the word. In your experience, we must begin to mentor our young children. It's tragic out here. Not just in the entertainment industry, in the world, whatever the climate, whatever the opportunity, that we, as the governing adults, should oversee and supervise everybody as much as you possibly can. That empowers us. We have a separation gap of jealousy and envy. And no, it can't exist. That's the breakdown power of who you are and what ignites you. Listen.
And that is what is so amazing about individuals like yourself, Angela, is that you open yourself up to being able to share the greatness that you've been given, to be able to help other people. It's not just about you, but you realize that really yours comes from helping other people. And I think that's a lesson that all of us can take away as well. Again, we've been speaking to Angela Ellerby of Double Exposure, talking a lot about what he's doing and helping in artist development, but also I think something we can all take away from in the way that we're developing our own lives. Well, we put forth our best self for it, our best life for it each and every day, I think, regardless of what our profession. That's something we can all learn from. Angelo, how can our listeners keep in contact with you and find out more information about the great work that you're doing, especially when it comes to helping individuals reach their full potential?
Well, you know, it's they can always email me direct, and I answer all of my emails. That's at Double Exposure. It's Angelo at dxxnyc.com. They can go to the site. They can fax me their concerns, and they can call me. I pick up the phone. I really do, and I get on the phone. And they can reach me at 212-629-9404, 212-629-9404, and I'm always available. And if I'm not, I'm going to get right back to you.
Well, and I'm a witness to that. He definitely does that. Angelo, it's been a pleasure sharing a part of the work that you're doing here on our program. We look forward to staying in contact with you. Thank you so much for what you're doing.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
said, no problem. Now, if you missed any part of my conversation with Angela Ellerbe or our first guest, Bruce Rosen, don't worry. You can catch the entire podcast about 10 minutes after we go off the air by going to the radio side of our program. Just go to www.conversationsliveradio.com. That's www.conversationsliveradio.com. There you can download it completely for free, save it to your computer or to a disk. For our listeners that are friends with me on Facebook or follow me on Twitter, you can already find the link there on both of my pages. Just go to www.facebook.com/CAWEB4, that's C-A-W-E-B-B, the number 4, or you can go to twitter.com/CyrusWeb, that's C-Y-R-U-S-W-E-B-B, and you can download it there completely for free. That's going to do it for us for this evening. Again, thank you so much for welcoming us into your cars, into your homes this evening. Until next time, my name is Cyrus Webb, saying as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music and also a great book. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live. Have a great evening.